Namaste and welcome back to another episode of The Sapient. Today, we have a very multifaceted person on the podcast. So, her name is Aisha, right? Anyways, I mess up names every time. I don't know why. Maybe
no,
I need
that's
to get
fine.
That. How are you, Aisha?
I'm doing well. How are you doing today? I am excited to be on this podcast. Thank you so much for inviting me, and I'm happy to see where this conversation goes.
Thank you so much for being here. So you are from Canada, right?
Yes, that is correct. I'm from Vancouver, Canada. So in BC, British Columbia.
Got it. So do you hate warmer, climates?
No, I don't particularly hate warmer climates. I don't have a prejudice against them. I guess I'm just in Canada. We tend to get lots of snow, and we've got snow in Alberta. In Vancouver, it's either rain or shine. So on the good days, it's sunny. Every other day, it's rain. So that's fun. It feels gloomy. You go outside and, it just puts you automatically in this bad mood where you feel lethargic and just... as if you don't want to do anything at all. You could just stay in bed under the covers for hours, but obviously you can't do that. On the sunny days, it's nice because you can go out for a walk. We've got lots of trees. We've got bushes. We've got green everywhere. So it's very scenic in that sense. But I enjoy going for runs, going for walks on the sunny days, but we get about two a week or two every... It depends on the month. I would say, all through winter, you get no sun, but in the summertime, it's better, It's like there's about a 50% chance there might be sun or rain. So yes, that's just how BC is, in Vancouver especially. But in Alberta, it's snow. We don't have four seasons there in Alberta. It's just snow or shine. It's almost two seasons everywhere. Although one of my friends in Toronto says that they have four seasons, it's just fall is shortened. So fall lasts for maybe about a couple days, 2 days. I don't know why I'm talking about the weather so much. It's, just a general conversation starter. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I would not live in those environments because, where I live, it's like we have 3 months of good summer, right? Good sunshine, and even in winter, it's pretty good. It gets to pretty nice temperatures during the afternoons. So I don't know you how people live in those environments.
You've got to have your coat. You look like some sort of person from the Arctic, from the North Pole. It's like people can barely see your face. You've got this huge hoodie, the furs, and so it's crazy. That's how it is.
It is crazy though. And it's also crazy that, that part of land was, probably inhabited like 200 years ago, right?
Yeah, Canada is a baby. It's so young. Like, you compare it to America and we don't have a rich history. It's like... we've got where everybody came where they didn't know where they wanted to go. They were just searching for a place. They found the sun and then, they were too lazy to go off and continue off to the places they wanted to visit. So they decided, I'm Canadian.
I'm fine here, right? I mean, that's actually a funny, history lesson, right? People think as if, it was very well planned, but most probably, most of the things that happened was chaos, right? And it was just result of chaos. Yeah. I mean, it's like, if you look at history, do you feel like history is fabricated?
Sorry, could you elaborate on that? What exactly you mean by fabricated? as if we look back on it and we have our own twist and perspective on it and it's not exactly accurate? Or is that what
yes,
you meant?
You know, yeah, I feel like history might not be as accurate as we think it is, but also it's like, you know, we have glorified a lot of things, right? You know, in the process. So yeah, what's your opinion on that?
I'd say that history in general, when you're looking back at things, you hear the stories, but when you listen to any story, no one's going to tell you the dark parts, or I guess not the most intriguing parts of a story. They're just going to hone into the, you know, most elaborate parts. Maybe it's climactic, it's dramatic. They're going to focus on that because it's what people want to hear. You're not going to listen to some boring story that's, you know, about maybe something that's been, you know, remained stagnant for a while. Nothing has changed. There's no characters in it. There's nothing fun. There's no wars. There's no drama. No one's going to listen to that. So I do believe that when you look back on history and you see all these wars, you see all these monarchs, all these dictators, they paint them in this light where it stays very true to a stereotype or to the character that you see. So, you know, if you look at someone like Hitler, let's say, you know, draw someone in, why not?
Yeah.
Or you look at, you know, Queen Elizabeth I, you look at King Louis, all these historical figures, they, you know, paint them out to be either the devil or a savior. You know, if you look at someone like Abraham Lincoln, some people would glorify them, some people would demonize them, and it's just the perspective you choose. It doesn't necessarily mean that that's who they were all the time, because humans are well-rounded people. We go through phases, you know, we go through highs, through lows. Sometimes we're upset at others, sometimes we're ecstatic. It's just that stereotype, that picture frame, those walls you want to enclose someone inside isn't necessarily truthful. It doesn't hold truth to the person. And I think when we look back on history, how you mentioned, is it fabricated? So in that sense, it could be fabricated, where we want to have this perspective. We want to either have them as a demon or have them as a hero. And then everything in their life aligns with that character that we've imposed upon them. So,
I mean, that's a
that was my interesting perspective. To your question.
Yeah, actually, that's a very interesting perspective, right? And talking about perspectives, you are a poet, right?
Yes, I am a poet, a singer-songwriter.
Yeah, and how did you like get into that?
Okay, so I got into poetry. It's a bit odd, I'd say. I got into poetry at the same time I got into singing and songwriting, because whenever I write down a poem, in my head I hear this melody. So it's a poem, but I could sing it as a song. So most of my poems start out as these short phrases. So I'll be, you know, in the shower, I'll be going for a walk, I'll be doing something, and then I'll hear like da 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 da. I have this melody in my head. And this sounds odd to, you know, the average person, because most people aren't going around mumbling to themselves or have these ideas in their head, but I do. And so with that, I usually attach words to it. And then once I've got a single word, like a golden nugget, I call it, it's just this one word that stands out, and it's one of those powerful words where you feel as though you can shift the perspective and create an entire story out of it with characters. And with songs, you're not necessarily writing from the point of view of like five or six characters, so it's not like you're writing a novel in that, you know, in that sense, or just to think about it like that. It's more songs, it's constrained to, you know, one individual, or maybe two if you're doing a bridge. So you're writing through this lens, and then with that lens, you could have another character in it. You could say, you know, this character either mistreated me or this character gave me joy in this sense. And you start developing this story. And with the story, I'd say that poetry and lyrics are very interconnected. So when you're writing poetry, you're thinking about metaphors. You're thinking about analogies, even like if you could describe it in a different way. You're using similes, you're using all these figures of speech in poetry. And then when you write a song, you're also thinking about those figures of speech and lyrics, especially. You're thinking more about the meter and the consonants and the assonants, how each word sounds, because it's a song, so you want it to be able to, you know, flow, to be able to come off the lips easy, just to be able to sing it. Because when you're thinking of the vocalization aspect of it, when you're vocalizing a song, you don't want to have to be fighting against yourself to stay on pitch and convey the song as easily as possible. So, you know, the technical aspect of the singing, you can go into, you know, vocal lessons, vocal training, just get an in-depth, you know, in-depth experience in that. So if you want to write songs, you can have those vocal lessons, and that helps you to stay on pitch and also to resonate with an audience. Because when we're recording vocals these days, and we're doing it in a DAW, it's on your computer, you've got your microphone set up, you've got all these, an audio interface, you've got your EQ, you've got your Melodyne. So Melodyne is just something where you tune vocals. And so since we have so much vocal tuning and equipment, it's not necessarily always just the staying on pitch that is problematic. It's more, can you sing a song with feeling? So can you evoke emotion in the listener? If you're singing a sad song and you're singing it all happily and you're ecstatic, then that's a bit, that's, you know, there's a juxtaposition there. You can do that intentionally if that's how your song's supposed to be. But in most cases, you're not singing a ballad like, you know, let's go, great. You know, it's not something as happy as that. But if you're singing a happy song, you don't want to sound like you just woke up in the morning and, you know, you don't want to go and you're just dragging yourself around. You know, that's not necessarily the best upbeat pop song you could think about. That's not what's going to resonate with others for the vocals. And when it, I'm sorry, I'm jumping to vocals for some reason, and you asked about poetry. But when it comes to vocals, there's all these nuances in a vocal that you can hear, especially for me as a singer, as well as a poet and a songwriter. You can hear these nuances in somebody's voice, because sometimes, you know, you'll have this breath and you'll keep the breath in the vocals. So it adds extra character and extra dynamics to the recording. You'll sometimes hear grunts, like if someone's feeling pain or it's in a ballad, and there's just all these small changes you can make with your voices to resonate with the audience. So let's say, you know, a song is, has this angry tone to it. It's about, maybe it's about a breakup song and they're angry at somebody. They're, the vocalist is on the verge of screaming to portray that anger, and yeah, that's how vocalization works. But I'm jumping back to the poetry, which is what you originally asked about. A lot of that, what I do is I have this spark of inspiration. Once I get that spark of inspiration, so either it's a melody and then I have words with it, I'll write it down in a notes app, or I'll just sing it into my phone. And then you take that, you construct more verses around it. So with songs, it goes, you know, verse, chorus, and then a bridge if you want it. You can also do other song structures, but I won't dive all the way into song structures because you could talk about that all day. And this is the most common song structure there is, because most people don't branch into other song structures where it's just verses, or if they just have choruses, or there's a plethora of them. But what you want to do is, I just write as much as possible, and then afterwards I reflect on it and I eliminate what doesn't stay true to the plot line and to the message I want to send out. And that just comes through, you have to change up words, especially when you're writing songs, because it has to fit the meter. So if you have, you know, three syllables in one verse for line one, you can't have like eight syllables in verse for line, verse two, line one, because it just doesn't fit the melody. So you have to think about that. There's probably more than three syllables in a line, but this is just an example. But you don't want to outstretch your syllable count. So you can do that by looking up other words that are similar in meaning, but would fit that syllable count, or you can just rephrase your line. And a lot of that is, how many times can you say the same thing? You know, because you have to think about, I want to say, for example, I hate sharks. I'm just coming off of things off the top of my head. How many ways can you say I hate sharks without using those same words, right? So that's what songwriting, writing poetry is all about.
Since you brought up the songwriting part of it, so let's dive into that. So since you have been doing it for some time, do you think today's music is so much more synthetic than organic?
Yes, if you're, you know, talking about synthetic as in we have more, I guess, just produced instrumental tracks. So we have more, like, I'd say computer generated voices, and you have a lot of vocal chopping. You've got to break up certain instruments. It's not acoustic, so it's not what the piano sounds like. It's not what that old church grand piano sounds like. It's not like what that
actually, my question is regarding the vocals. You know, there used to be a time when you when you would sing probably, you know, a paragraph or a chorus, and you know, you would edit that, whereas today I see in music production people are just you know, clipping word by word in recording, and then they're just editing those words. And do you think that's, you know, like more of a synthetic approach, or it's more organic?
So I'd say there is a lot more synthetic vocal recordings, because nowadays you can take a vocal and just chop it up, run it through a couple of VST plugins, and then it turns into like this robot sound, or it turns into something else that's completely different than the original voice. And a lot of producers do that now, especially in EDM, electronic dance music, and other forms of dance music where there's a lot of like synths in it. There's a lot of like these electronic basses. There's these, you know, these atmospheric sounds, I'd say. And a lot of people use those vocals as accents. So if you hear a lot of Billie Eilish songs, you'll notice that she has her main vocal, and then she does a lot of vocal layering. So you go into it, and there's about, I don't know how many she does, but I wouldn't be surprised if it was like 10 tracks of vocals, or even more than that. Because you've got your main vocal, and then you've got tracks with your accent vocals, and then those accent vocals, they can be pitched up. So maybe it's an octave up, maybe it's an octave down. And when I say octave, that's just where it is on the musical scale. So if I say E and then I go E, it's like an octave above that, where it's the same pitch, but it's on, it's pitched higher or it's pitched lower. So you've got those. You can also do thirds, you can do fifths, which is just different notes on the scale. So it's all on this in the same mm-hmm. key. It's in tune, but they're just pitched differently. And then some of them could be different types of vocals, especially where you have like the mm-hmm. soft sounding vocals. So you could do a vocal take on ah, or you could do a vocal take on oo, or, you know, whatever you want to do. You could even add in ad libs. So ad libs are like little, mm-hmm. you know, you'll hear them in a lot of rap music where you'll have the main
yeah.
track going and then you've got main lead vocal and then you've got in between the spaces. So in between the mm-hmm. beats, someone says, mm-hmm. yeah, yeah, you know, da, 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 da. And then you just add, you play yeah. it in. It's just to keep the listener mm-hmm. interested, especially nowadays mm-hmm. with pop music. You listen to a song, and if you don't like it within the first 3, 4, 5 seconds, you just skip on to the next song. And so when it comes mm-hmm. to the world of streaming, mm-hmm. you have to know how to hook the listener in the first 3, 5 seconds to keep them there listening yeah. to the track.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So since you brought up rap, what's your opinion about you know, Kendrick and Drake beef?
I actually have not, I don't know much about Kendrick and Drake's beef, just because mm-hmm. as a singer-songwriter, I'm not necessarily focused on the artists themselves. It's more the music mm-hmm. they produce, and I don't know why, but yeah. if you talk about celebrities and their beef, I'll be like, who, what? But I'll be like, I know their songs. Like,
yeah.
I know how this production is produced. I know how they went, how it was recorded in the studio. I could tell you that yeah. this instrument was used here, this instrument. But then you talk about mm-hmm. celebrities and their beef, and I'm like, well, that's just yeah. marketing. Like, what, mm-hmm. ooh, you know?
Yeah,
that's
of course. Just, of course, it's just marketing. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just what people out there want to hear.
Mm-hmm.
Because
yeah,
nobody,
because, you know,
oh, if you're not, sorry, you're saying?
Yeah, because Drake put out a, you know, a diss track, right? And like Kendrick responded within like 38 or 40 minutes with his own music. Of course, you know, he has a team, right? But it's, I feel like it's impressive to go after a person and completely, you know, like actually hurt them yes. In just 40 minutes.
Yes.
Right.
Well, I mean, these people are professionals, so you can write a song just like that, and it can be exactly what you want to communicate, especially with rappers, because a lot of rappers, you go into, you know, clubs, you go into local bars, and you'll see a lot of these rappers who have refined their craft where they're able to just go on stage and then do a performance completely off the top of their heads. And
yes.
that is a skill in itself, because you've got to mm-hmm. know what you want to say. You've got to understand mm-hmm. cadences. You've got to understand rhythm. But then you just mm-hmm. don't want to be singing about anything and everything at all, because you can, you know, say, you know, you bring
yeah.
in bees, and then you bring in your lunch that you had, and then you bring in, you know, some person you met off the street. That's not a coherent
yeah.
song that doesn't have any message to it. So to mm. understand those cadences, that meter, and then be able to convey that message, that's a craft within itself. So if you can create a diss
yes.
track and you're able to, you know, pinpoint flaws in somebody else, put them into the mm-hmm. song while still paying attention to the beat, the meter, that is
yeah.
something that takes years to master. So, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and I also feel like that kind of quick response, only the rap genre can do it. I honestly feel like not every, you know, not artists from other genre can do it. Because, you know, rap is built on that, right? In terms of, you know, in the spot, you have to come up with, you know, bars, you know, slash sentences.
Yes.
That has to be very accurate.
Yes. No, it is different, I'd say. I'd say diss tracks are more prevalent in
mm-hmm.
rap music or the rap
yes.
genre.
Uh-huh.
Although actual talented songwriters, they can come up with a song in, you know, maybe 10 minutes, 15 minutes. It's just that the recording process afterwards is what takes a lot of time. And if you don't have a team with you, like you don't have a team of producers, you're looking at these artists, but you also have to understand they've probably, they can call somebody up, get in the studio, have a music producer there, have another team there, have this person there, and then they can record it. So they've got the idea. I'm not discrediting their talent at all, because it still takes, you know, a lot of talent yourself to come up with what you're writing and what you want to write, but they do have everything accessible to them. It's just a lot of artists who are, I guess, underdog artists who are not as well known or prominent yet, it takes time to do that recording, because you've got to, you know, book studio time, and depending on the studio, that might not be until a month. Or if you're doing it at home, you've got to record it yourself, and then maybe you need mastering, someone to master the tracks, because you don't know how to do the mastering, but you can do everything else. So if you want to learn that, that's going to take time. But then if you're going to do it yourself, then that's going to take, you know, more time. So I'd say with these artists, a lot of what they have is that fame, that social media presence, that influence. And because they have that, they can have a team behind them. So you can get tracks out a lot quicker than you could if you were a one-man show, right? So
Yeah, definitely. Yes. But I also feel like rap is harder to write, because there are a lot of, you know, double entendres, right? And sometimes it's like triple entendres. And it's not something that's like imaginative, right? Because it has to correlate with the reality of it.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And I feel like that's a harder job than, you know, a Taylor Swift song.
Yes. So with rap, I would say when it comes to rappers in general, they're paying more attention to the meter and the rhythm. So they're always going to be on beat. When it comes to a singer or a vocalist, rappers are vocalists, but a singer, it's more about being on pitch, extending your range. Like if you compare a rap singer, let's just say Eminem, and then you compare him to Beyonce, right? They're both exceptionally talented. It's just one can do one thing better. One has its own style. The other one has, you know, her own style. So with Beyonce, she's a singer. Her training would consist of doing scales. So scales every day, going up, extending her range. Scales are just when you go on the piano, you do notes, you go all the way up, all the way down. You're doing that with your vocals. You're going up and down, experimenting with ranges. You're also trying to be on pitch all the time. And if you get up into those whistle notes, because, you know, Mariah Carey does whistle notes. You've got Ariana Grande who does whistle notes. Those whistle notes takes tons of training, and it can be very taxing on your voice if you don't do them properly, because then you can get vocal nodules, and then your voice is done. You're out. You have either have to have surgery, then you've got to have that time to recover. So it's having that technique in place, the foundations down, so you're able to perform in a way that is healthy, that is natural, and is conducive to a good sound, as well as, you know, safe for your body. Because, you know, a singer, you can go, you can do a performance, and you can try and get that high note, but if you're forcing it out, that over time is going to kill your voice. So you have to know how to do that properly, that you have to work with vocal coaches. So most of those types of singers are working with vocal coaches or focusing on that. And then if you're looking at somebody like Taylor Swift, Taylor Swift is not well known for her vocal performance, because her vocals are mediocre, right? So this is, well, it's just, you know, true to her singer. Like she doesn't have the best voice in the world. She's definitely not a Beyonce. She's definitely not an Ariana Grande. She's not a Whitney Houston by far, right? She's not any of those powerhouses, any of those vocalists. She is someone who focuses and centralizes her entire craft on her songwriting abilities. So her songwriting abilities are more about telling
breakups,
a story.
Heartbreaks.
Breakups, heartbreaks, love stories. And that has to do more with poetry. So that is, can you make a metaphor that doesn't sound like every cliche thing you've heard before? So, you know, we've heard like the cliches. I'm trying to think of a cliche right now. But you've heard all these cliche phrases that you're like, oh, I've heard that a million times. Oh, you know, everybody says that. But a good songwriter, especially a lyricist, will take the most, I guess, troublesome times, the most dramatic experiences, and they'll pinpoint these small details in those experiences. They'll paint this picture in your mind. So that can be done through imagery, like the way someone felt, the way, you know, touch. Hear, can you hear the sound? Can you see sight? So you're thinking of your five senses. You're also thinking about how you can describe a scene. So what place are you in? If you're writing a song, let's say, about a breakup, I'm trying to think of a Taylor Swift song. Let me think. Like, I know a lot of Taylor Swift songs. Let's just say Bad Blood. So this is with Kendrick Lamar in it, because I think the feature version has Kendrick Lamar, but it's like, baby, now we got Bad Blood. Now we got problems. Bullets don't fix, Band-Aids don't fix bullet holes. You say sorry just for, I can't remember the lyrics. You say sorry just for her.
No worries.
You say sorry just
That's...
for show. Yes. You say sorry just for show. Band-Aids don't fix bullet holes. You say sorry just for show. And, you know, you're talking about Band-Aids and bullet holes. It's like, obviously, like, the scar that someone's put on you, it can't be mended. And instead of saying, oh, you know what, this just can't be mended, you're using this metaphor of, like, a Band-Aid can't fix a bullet hole. So that does take a lot of craft. And someone who does something similar to Taylor Swift is Ed Sheeran. So if you listen back to any Ed Sheeran songs, you'll notice there's a lot of storytelling there. And people connect with stories because they want to hear the backstory. You don't just want to be like, oh, I got my heart broken and that's it. You want to know, you know, where were you when you got your heart broken? Who was it with? Who else was there? What day was it? Was it a sunny day? Was it a windy day? How did it go? How did you mend from it? And where were you? What was your mental state like? So it's all these details that help others connect to her songs.
Got it. So stepping away from technicality of music, who are your like favorite artists?
So I'd say I am, wow, this is a difficult question. I like a lot of artists for a lot of different reasons. So when it comes to vocalists, I'd say my top vocalist is Whitney Houston, just because I've loved her vocals, like even growing up, like the amount of power she has to just sing a song, that powerhouse, those belting, and you know, belting is when you come to like that high note and sort of this mix between screaming, but it's not screaming, it's just this very raw and tough sound. So it's like her belting I've loved. And if you listen to her tracks, you go back, you'll realize how she can just turn a song into a masterpiece. So Whitney Houston did a cover of Dolly Parton's
and
I
else?
Will Always Love You.
And who is the other artist you like? That was the question.
So I'd say Whitney Houston. I'd say Ed Sheeran. I like Ed Sheeran for his songwriting and storytelling. If you listen back to his oldest albums, you'll just hear an acoustic guitar and him singing, and that's it. It's very acoustic, it's very raw, and you can see how talented he is even with the guitar and the vocals, because that takes a lot just to use two instruments and be able to keep people interested in your song and keep them engaged during the whole experience. That is something that could take years to accomplish. Then I'd also say I do like Taylor Swift sometimes for her songs, especially sometimes with her pop. She's worked with a lot of producers who have helped her albums. She also has that amazing storytelling abilities. I'd say I'm trying to think of more singers and songwriters and rappers.
Yeah. So let me tell you who are my favorites, right? Meanwhile, when you think. I like Adele for her music and her lifestyle choice. You know, like she will, she will drop an album and she'll just disappear, you know, and just when people will start forgetting that she exists, you know, she comes back, right? she's the one. And then it is Sia, you know, because she has, I feel like a very good, you know, vocal talent, but also she, you know, she does experiment with a lot of languages. Amazing. Yeah, she sung a song in Punjabi recently, like a verse in a song.
Do you know a lot about Sia's backstory? Because I could fill you in on some of Sia. No? Okay.
Yeah, please.
So Sia is actually accidentally famous. So she was a ghostwriter. So before she became this famous, like you'll see her with her hair, and it's because she didn't want to be famous in the first place. What happened is she recorded these tracks for a song, and her vocals were so good, the music producer couldn't get another popular artist who could do the vocals to the standard that she could do it. And they're like, and he was like, they're not working. So she, he went behind her back, released a song without her knowing, and then she became famous, and she was like, what happened? Like, I was only supposed to be a ghostwriter. And they're like, no, you're too good. So you see her with the hair, and it's because like she never wanted to be famous in the first place.
I mean, that's fun, right? But of course, with, you know, but the talent, amount of talent that she had, it would be very hard, right, not to become famous, you know, because you know, that's Sia. I like, of course, I like, you know, rappers, you know, like Eminem and, you know, most of rappers, I just like them. I don't know why, but I like rap bit more than other style of music. It might be because I am an Indian, right? So I have this musical heritage, right? And when I listen to Western, you know, pop songs, it just feels flat to me, because you know, I'm not discrediting any Western musician, but Indian musicians, even a child can hit a better note and, you know, do better job at, you know, I would say singing than a lot of professional singers in the Western world, right? Even though they use, you know, synthetic I would say practices, right, to sound better. So that's why, you know, I don't, you know, listen to a lot of pop music. So have you ever heard like so any Indian music?
No, I haven't. I just, because I'm from North America, I don't come across a lot of Indian music in my day-to-day life. I did have like a couple of musicians who were from India, and sometimes they'd send me the tracks, but their tracks were more like pop and Western music. So I'm like, I'm not sure if that's exactly Indian music. But if you could fill me in, that would be great.
Sure, I can send you a couple of tracks. Yeah, I can send you.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Indian music is different a little bit, I would say. But it is still, because it's just because, you know, we have had such a long, I would say, history of music, right?
Yes.
Yeah, it doesn't.
No.
Yeah. Yeah, and we were talking about music, right? Like the Indian music and, you know, the Western music and everything. Yeah, so what type of music do you like?
I like all genres. Like, I will listen to anything. If you put it on, I'll listen to it because, you know, I'm a musician. I just have that analysis hat on versus that, oh, I like this, I don't like this. Like, I've listened to heavy metal, I've listened to rap, I've listened to country, I've listened to blues, I've listened to pop, I've listened to anything you can think of out there. As long as it connects with someone, I will give it a listen just because I want to. Yeah.
Yeah. you know, do you listen to like movie scores?
Like movie tracks, movies instrumentals.
Okay. Yes, yes.
Sometimes I'll listen to the soundtrack of a movie if I like a particular song, but I'm not someone who goes and just listens to the entire soundtrack unless I want to, you know, unless I'm working on a project and it relates to a movie and I have to listen to the entire soundtrack. I'm not someone who just says, oh, this is my favorite movie, I'm going to listen to every song on there. But, you know, sometimes that could be good if you're like a musical director for a movie, a musical supervisor, and you need to know how musical soundtracks are curated, then listening to an entire soundtrack would definitely help. So, yes.
Yeah, because there are a couple of great musicians, right, who put out like awesome music in movies.
That happens all the time.
Yeah. Yes. You know. Yeah, I don't know how musicians are able to do it. Of course, because I'm musically illiterate. But I don't know how musicians are able to do it because, you know, to provide music to a situation is a very rare thing, right? Because, you know, of course, you could provide music to something like a love story or, you know, a sad situation. But when you look at, you know, space movies, right? And, you know, a space shuttle is just, you know, going through the space. And giving music to that, I feel, is more tricky, right? Because, it's not something that everybody can relate to because no one has been out there in the space yet.
Well, it all boils down to the feeling. So if you're producing a movie or a song for a movie where someone's launching themselves up to space, like, what is the plot about? What's the script about? Is it fear? Like, have they never been to space before? Then is it that feeling of suspense, that feeling of ambiguity, not knowing what's going to happen? And then that you can turn into a song because you can use, like, notes that are a bit, you know, unstable, where you've got, like, this rockiness. You call these sometimes diminished chords or minor chords, which are, if you use certain chord structures, you can get the sound where you have the feeling of suspense if you add more instruments to it. So sometimes it's like that. But let's say if it's for a space movie and it's this excitement because it's the first time they go to the moon, then you're going to reflect on those emotions of excitement of, you know, this is the most amazing thing that's ever happened to this astronaut who's been working their entire life for this one moment, then that's going to have an entirely different sound to it than something where it's like, this is nerve-wracking, right? So a lot of it comes to those emotions, and then how can you convey those emotions through music.
Got it. Yeah. But of course, you know, it takes immense talent, right, to do that.
You can't deny that. No.
Yeah. And finally, coming to your podcast. So you are a fellow podcaster. Why did you do it?
Okay, so I started a podcast, number one, because I was terrible at public speaking. Okay, so I'm someone who's naturally introverted, and I don't... Yeah, I know. You're just saying this stuff. Like, are you sure? Are you really sure?
Yeah.
No. But this is like podcasting, okay? Like everyday scene. I'm not out there talking to everybody out there. No, this is like my podcast hat. I'm just transitioned. No, I'm someone who's naturally introverted. I love how I say this. Just when I talked for hours on it.
Yeah.
You can even get an award. Sorry about that. Yeah.
Yeah.
No. Yeah, I'm someone who talks very... Okay. I talk very minimal. Minimally.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm supposed to believe you. Okay.
Yes. In social settings. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, how do I improve my communication skills? How do I become a more effective communicator? And then how do I also learn a lot from others? And at first I just picked up my phone and I started talking to myself like I was recording some sort of TikTok, but that didn't work out because I was like, this is weird. This is just weird. I don't know who does this. I don't like this format.
Yeah.
And then you look back and you replay and you're like, I look stupid the entire time. Like, just dumb. I don't want to post this. I don't want to send this to a friend. I want to delete it off my phone, pretend like it never existed. So it was that, overcoming that fear, and then doing podcasting where I was like, you know what? Maybe I want to hear other people's stories. And if I can get guests on my podcast who talk about creativity, especially because I'm so passionate about creating things when it comes to my music, when it comes to my writing, when it comes to podcasting, I love learning what everybody else is up to, how they got started. And if they have any tips or tricks, general advice that others could apply to their field, their area, I believe that's mutually beneficial for everyone involved in the experience. So that's part of why I started it. I also wanted to do a lot more networking. I wanted people to actually listen to my songs because, you know, that's good when you've worked on something for months on end and you're like, I'm gonna publish this, but it's like zero. You know, maybe my mom's listened to this 1,000 times. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, and
that happens.
So that's part of it. And yeah, so it's about learning, about putting myself out there, about connecting with others. Yeah.
Yeah, you're back.
Yeah, you're back as well. Sorry, you cut out there as well for a second there. Yeah.
Yes, I think there is some issue with the internet, maybe. I don't know. You are lagging a lot.
Yeah.
Like, could you try switching off the camera for a second? Let's see if that, or leave it, it's okay, no problem.
Sure. Is this better?
Yes, and now can you switch it on back? Sometimes technology works in mysterious ways. Yes.
Yes, can you hear me? Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes.
So, who was the biggest guest you had on your podcast?
Like in terms of success?
Yeah, of course, not in size. Yeah, come on. It has to be in sixes.
I mean, I don't know why. Yeah, that's an odd mention. I do audio podcasts, but yes. No, so... when it comes to success, it's hard to say because I've had a lot of entrepreneurs who have been very successful that have been on my podcast. So entrepreneurs, I mean, like if you're measuring success in terms of wealth, that's what entrepreneurs, I'd say, use as a good indicator of success. Musicians use more fame and, you know, success, how they connect with their audience, and artists are in the similar realm. I've had a real estate guy who had, like, I think it was 150 complexes that he owned, and it like he was on one of the top 10 podcasts out there. So mm-hmm. he was interviewed on that, and then he's like coming yeah. over to my podcast, and like this is like big shit, you know?
Yeah.
Like I'm not top 10. But yes, that was one of the guests. I've also mm-hmm. had other successful entrepreneurs and artists who were mm-hmm. experts in their specific niches. They weren't yeah. famous, but mm-hmm. like they were the most successful in that niche, in that industry. So mm-hmm. I've had people who they've had like successful businesses, especially mm-hmm. this one guy. He started making any type of object, toy mm-hmm. figurine that you could imagine. And mm-hmm. he was on the late night show, or he made something for the late night show. So I had him mm-hmm. on my podcast, which was fun to hear about his experience and how he built up his business for about 10 years, I think, and how it was mm-hmm. an accident, how he got into it, because he was originally a professor, a teacher, and then he tried this one mm-hmm. thing and it blew up. So that was yeah. part of it. I've actually had other people, musicians, who have actually grown quite rapidly. So they're successful. Some of them are mildly successful on Instagram, uh-huh. on other social media platforms. I've had artists who do a lot of like artist retreats where they have a company and then they host mm-hmm. like a 10-day retreat for people to come. So like I'd say everyone is doing well who's been on my podcast. Like they're definitely go-getters and they want to... Okay, yeah. Yes. And just laughed at the go-getter.
No, you said everybody yeah. who comes on to my podcast is successful. So I was like, yeah.
Well,
you should have a waiting list for that.
I'd say mildly successful. Yeah, like mildly, yeah. like they're ambitious, I'd say, you know? Mm. Like it's yeah. not, I have somebody who comes onto my podcast who does nothing with their lives mm. or just, you watch his TV all day and it's like, you know what? I want to show up today. I just want to talk about, you know, SpongeBob SquarePants. No, that's not my kind of podcast. I'm sure there's other yeah. podcasts. But
that would be
you know.
Mine. That would be mine. Yeah. That's my podcast.
Okay. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. yeah. No, if you want to come on and just talk about, you know, the latest TV show series, maybe that your 7-year-old cousin watches, you know, just...
What if you're a babysitter, though? You'd have to watch those shows.
Well, I mean, I don't know how many, I haven't had any babysitters on my podcast. I'm sure they've done babysitting, you know, at some point in their lives, you know, because everyone does that at some points to make some money or get an extra income. But mm-hmm. I haven't specifically interviewed a babysitter because I think most of them would be 12 years old or a little. So, you yeah. know, how do you feel about your babysitting career? You know, that.
Yeah, I think that would be a very interesting question, right?
Like, yeah.
Uh-huh. What was the best baby you looked at? You know, you looked after. What was the worst baby you looked after? You
yes. know? Yeah. No, one just screamed for hours on end. You know? That's all it would yeah. do. Threw up on me.
Yeah. It would be a post-game interview, you know?
Yeah.
In sports, uh-huh. you know, we have post-game interviews. So it would be like that, you know. What do you feel about your performance today?
Yes. I don't know. I guess unsuccessful. The baby wouldn't shut up.
Yes, you would say the first half of the day was good and the second half really was bad, you know.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, but you did not mention me.
What, like, on, oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. I was on your podcast.
Yes, I'm so sorry.
You see, Aisha, if you had asked me who is the most successful guest you have had on, I would have said you. But you missed that chance, you know. You missed that opportunity.
I'm so sorry. I wouldn't expect to be the most successful guest on your podcast, but okay. Yeah, no, yeah, you as well. No, you are very successful when it comes to like social media marketing, and you know, I even talked to you before this podcast.
Yeah,
you know, and yeah. You know, just working with yeah. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
So guys, just a warning: I did not pay her to say so. You know, there is no sponsorship involved. So whatever she's saying, it is responsibility, not mine.
Yeah, no, Ganesh, he's great. Like most successful guest ever. Like you cannot.
Thank yes. you. Yeah. So guys, you heard it here on CBN that I'm the most successful guest that you can have on your podcast. Yeah, thanks to Aisha, and 10% of my income goes to her now.
No. Yeah. No. Yeah. No, but I mean, yeah, everybody on my podcast has been successful.
Successful,
so,
right?
No, you're in the boat.
Yeah.
You're heading the right way. It's good.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. Yeah. I think that's why podcasting is fun, right? Because as you said, it brings out a lot of character in you, right? Because, you know, talking to a person for like, let's say 10-minute conversation is not hard, right? And yeah. As we did in the starting, we could talk about weather, we could talk about a lot of bullshit, right? You know, 10 minutes would go on. But
yeah, this could have been an hour-long podcast about the weather.
Right. But if you want to talk to a person proactively and, you know, make them also comfortable, I feel that's a very big challenge, right? And one advantage or disadvantage that podcast has is, you know, people are listening to us on Spotify or on Amazon Music, you know, on audio platforms. So if a person is not interested or not genuine or is just, you know, bored, people can very easily figure it out through, you know, the voice, right? Because there is no visual to go off.
Yes.
So, yeah, I mean, that's why even I started my podcast, right? But, yeah, would you ever, you know, have sponsors on your show?
I mean, if I can get them, like...
Oh, my
God. It's not like I need to say no to a sponsor. Be like, no, don't give me your money. Don't. I'll make this a success. You just go away. Yeah. Leave me alone.
Yeah, leave me alone. I'm not a capitalistic person, you know.
Yeah.
I'm a communist, you know. I don't like your money.
No. Yeah, that's what I'll say.
Yeah, I would imagine you would have an easier time finding sponsors than me.
Well, I have an audio-only podcast because I've got this podcasting...
Dude, you just mentioned Hitler at the start of this podcast. Who would want to sponsor us? Who would want to sponsor us?
I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah, want to be associated with that.
Yeah, whereas your podcast is more family friendly and, you know, it's well put together. So yeah, I feel like you'd have better time finding sponsors than me.
Yes. Well, I like your podcast because with my podcast it feels very professional. You know, it's very like strictly professional. Your podcast is like, you know, you can get a cup of tea, you can get some coffee and just talk about any and everything. So I love that vibe there. But with mine, it is that very professional where it's where you go when you want to get insights, where you actually want to know what this person has been doing. And it's great for entrepreneurs, for artists, for self-employed people who just want to build their brand. And they do have that professional appearance and want to upkeep that. So that's more what my podcast is for. But I like doing this because it's different. You know?
Yeah.
And I think my personality shines through more when I'm doing this versus...
Definitely.
When I'm doing more of my podcast because I'm listening and I'm just asking more critical questions. And
are you implying that I do not ask critical questions?
Are you trying to make this the most triggering experience? So are you saying no, you know, she don't ask critical questions.
Critical questions.
No,
my questions
like, you need
are
to
average
up your game.
At the best.
Yeah, they're just I don't know what you're doing. It's just not working. Yeah, is it? No. Yeah.
Yeah. I think I need to work on it though.
Well, no, like if you want actual feedback, you know, you ask great questions. I love how it's such a relaxed tone, and the questions are, honestly, I think you could ask a question with 5 words and I'd still be able to come up with something or some, you know, response.
Yes, I'm sure. Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Because I asked a question which was like 4 words long.
And I answered with like a 3-paragraph response.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, yes. Thank God you're not a teacher, though. Thank God. Otherwise, we would be in trouble. Yeah. I mean, the children studying, you know, under you would be in very much trouble. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll remember to, like, not ever go into education.
Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah, because once I had a teacher, right? She was, like, very talkative. So, at the start of the class, we would say, I heard you had went on a trip, right? And she would talk about the trip for the whole class. No teaching that day. Yeah.
And I bet you asked her on purpose just because you didn't want to do any of the work. Yeah, I do that
definitely.
All the time. Yes.
Yeah.
I don't feel like math today. You know what? We're going to ask her about her trip.
Yeah. That's us.
She's going to talk about it the entire day. let's do it.
Yes.
Yes.
So that's why you would be bad for education.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And I feel like that's why podcast is important to me. You know, I really don't care about sponsors. Not because I am against them, but, you know, it's like, I don't want to be censorized, right? Like, if you say, you know, cut this, cut that, I'm like, I'm going to cut you off, you know. I don't need you. Right?
Yeah, bye, see ya.
Yeah, bye, see you. Because
I like to talk about Hitler on my podcast, okay?
Folks, you heard it here first. Aisha likes to talk about Hitler. I don't know why. We do not want to dig deep. Yeah, that's what. Like, you know, like, I need my guests to be able to talk about anything they want, right?
Yeah.
Because that was the original concept of podcast, because all the radio shows, all the news, all the media was, you know, so heavily censorized. They're like, okay, let's create our own stuff, you know, that is not regulated.
Yeah.
But you are out there in the Trudeau land, where they're trying to bring a bill against us in a podcasters. But thankfully, I'm not Canadian.
Yeah, thankfully for you.
Yeah, it definitely sounds like a you problem than a me problem.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, good luck with that. Yeah. Yeah, but I don't think you'd have trouble because your podcast is, you know, mainly being formal and you don't criticize the government actively.
Nope. No, stay out of that. No, nothing. Yeah.
That's good for you. Like, do you prep for your episodes? Like, do you do research and, you know, prepare questionnaires?
No. Because I do a lot of episodes a day. Like, I do 2 or 3 episodes a day and they're all at a time. So I do, like, look at their bio, what they said. Sometimes if they have website links, I'll go click on those. or when I'm asking them, I'll just briefly see what they're about. But I don't, I'm not somebody who has like notes and pages full of questions.
Yeah.
I just come up off of everything off the top of my head, which I don't know if that's a good thing because I haven't gone back and listened to all of my episodes.
Yes, listening to ourselves is the worst thing. Yeah, I know.
No,
I know that.
I can't do it. I like, I critique it and I'm like, I shouldn't have said that. I shouldn't have said that either. I shouldn't have said that. Why do I say so many times?
That happens.
What is this like? Don't use like in every sentence.
I don't know why. Don't... Yeah, I do use you know a lot.
Uh huh. Or, right? Like, right?
Right,
you get it?
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
And yes. Yes, I use yes a lot. Yeah, but I really don't care though. You know. See, right now I said, you know.
But you know what
okay.
I mean.
Yeah. It's okay. You know, I feel that's the process of podcasting, right? Where, you know, I'm here to have fun. That's my first objective. Rather than looking professional or sounding professional, right?
Because that's my main objective. Like for
exactly. That's why you are here. That's why you're on the earth, to be professional. I am here to make every guest controversial.
Okay.
Yes, that's my main objective. Aisha, it was very nice talking to you. Thank you very much for, you know, being here, I guess, and talking about Hitler. Thank you so much for being on the show.
I mean, you said I guess there, so like I don't know. That was like, I guess it was nice having.
Yeah, at this point, it's just guessing game.
I don't know at this point. You know,
and
how this podcast plays out.
Yes, you know, we have to wait till it's published and wait for the backlash. Because we have criticized Taylor Swift.
Yeah, I think Taylor Swift is crap. What do you think?
Yes. There you go. That's your career. You just said, fuck you to your career. You just criticize the most uncriticizable character. Yeah.
No. But
On that controversial note, guys, thank you so much for being here.
I feel as though the less talking I do, the better.
It's okay. I think we can recover from that in the future. So, guys, this is the end of the episode. Thank you so much for being here. And if you liked Aisha and her character, you know, her podcast or all of her links will be in the description. Just go there and show her and our support. And if you have any criticism towards her, I don't know. Deal with it.
Just email me.
just email Aisha and say, I did not like your opinion about Taylor Swift. That has to be the first email that she receives.
I'm a Swiftie. What?
So until the next episode, take care and bye-bye.
Yeah.